Hi, nice to have you back with us as Bruce Jenkins joins us from the San Francisco Chronicle. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How's it going?
Pretty good. You know, it's St. Louis baseball, and just talking with Ron Wotus this morning about it, there's such history between the Giants and the Cardinals. You go back to 2002 and the pennant races of 12 and 14. There's something about Giants-Cardinals that really brings it out. And I think this has been a fabulous six games. Giants could have won them all, and we've got the 6-1 today.
Yeah, you're right. It's always really compelling. I mean, the Cardinals got really good. You know, you go back to the mid-60s, and it seems like they've been pretty good, if not really good, ever since. You know, they just some World Series appearances. You know, the great uniforms, the great baseball town, the great fans. We talk about them giving an honor to Dick Tidrow, you know, in the series opener, and of course the recent postseason series with the Giants and Cardinals. You got some unbelievable stuff, you know, which you never forget. Jose Oquendo and, oh, my God, you know, should Hamaker have started that game? And all, you know, Barry Zito in St. Louis, that's one of the greatest moments I've ever witnessed. Zito's game that he pitched that they had to have, and he delivered. Just some amazing stuff and great memories.
I thought DeSclafani pitched a decent game last night. It was interesting to see two opposite field home runs, but very strong hitters. Goldschmidt just kills the Giants, and he can hit right center, but O'Neill really crushed his two. I thought DeSclafani handled himself all right last night.
Oh, he was great. Yeah, you're right. O'Neill's he's like a power lifter. He's awfully strong. And Goldschmidt, you know, he's just going to hurt the Giants forever and pretty much everybody else. But, you know, Kim is so good, the Cardinal lefty. He is very, very good, a strike thrower, and he had to be pretty much perfect to hang with him. And, you know, it's a couple of bad pitches. DeSclafani was fine, nothing to worry about. The Kim was a little bit better, and the Cardinals pulled that one out.
I will tell you this, and I think the Giants could have won every game that they've played of the five. The Cardinal bullpen, Bruce, they start bringing those guys in, and they throw hard. You know, everything's 94 or above. But, boy, I'll tell you something, they can walk you. And that strikeout of Estrada, he's a young kid, and he went for that Reyes 58-foot curveball. But that would have loaded the bases. The Cardinal bullpen does everything to get you back in the game.
Well, until you get to Reyes, though, he hasn't dropped a save yet. He's 23 for 23 or something. And those were astounding breaking pitches he threw to to Estrada. But, yeah, it's pretty dicey up to that point. But if you give him a lead, he's going to put you away.
You know, I was thinking about DeSclafani a little bit, and I don't know if you saw this in the notes yesterday, but first season of the Giants with the Giants and having 10 or more wins at the All-Star break. And listen to this list. How about this that he's on now? Johnny Antonelli, 1954, 13-2. You've got 1959, Sad Sam Jones, 10-8. He was terrific.
Oh, my.
Vita, 1978, 12-6. And we forget Johnny Cueto, 2016. He was 13-1 at the break in his first year. And then here comes DeSclafani at 10-3. How about that list?
That's a heck of a list. And we get a look at Cueto today, I think. Isn't he pitching today?
Yeah.
Which will be interesting. You know, they need the good consistent second half from him, which would really be a boost. Great veteran pitching in St. Louis, that'll be fun. But yeah, DeSclafani he's just a stud out there. I mean, he's got terrific stuff. He's got a good way about him. He's got a lot of mound presence, and he's a heck of a competitor. He's really resurrected his career, and another very smart pickup by Farhan.
Well, we're talking trades now, of course, until the deadline. And, last night, was Exhibit A of, bench players playing a lot, and they're really not getting any production from left field. Now, people are going to come back. Longoria's going to come back. Posey's going to come back. Belt's going to come back. But they really don't have an alternative in left field. And maybe that's the area, if they are going to get a hitter, they have to go to left field.
Yeah, I think they're probably at that point. You know, you keep waiting for Dickerson to bust out, and he's certainly capable of it, and they have time. They don't have to give up on him or anything like that, but they kind of need to get him in a groove where it's not just an occasional blast. You know, he's got so much power. He's a good line drive hitter. He's got a good approach up there, but you know, also he fans on too many fastballs. Sometimes he's just not seeing or getting around on the good fastballs, and that's not a good thing. So I think it's a little bit of jury out thing, but you know, they could definitely use a right-handed hitter who can play left field and give you some consistent play out there where you feel confident enough in the platooning. I mean, I agree that would be a spot where they could really shore things up.
Well, and I don't think you can wait because you want to win the division. You got a one-game lead over the Dodgers. The Dodgers are getting well right now in Colorado. The bats are starting to boom a lot, and their pitching's still questionable. But you want to win the division, and these are vital games now, and you don't know when Belt will be back because you bring Belt back and put him at first. You can put Wade and Ruff in left field. And maybe that's something Farhan's considering, but you don't know when Belt will be back. So I think you have to make a move sooner rather than later.
Yeah, probably so. And, you know, the Dodgers are coming up now tomorrow, and that's going to be a really interesting series. You talk about pitching. I mean, they've got some real problems. I mean, Kershaw's out indefinitely. He's got, you know, who knows what's going to happen there. Bauer may never pitch for the Dodgers again. I would be surprised if he did. And, you know, Dustin May's out for the season. I think the Giants get Tony Gonsolin tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
And, right. and then on Tuesday, they might get somebody you never heard of and making his debut. You know, David Price is going to figure into this rotation. But the last I saw, there were a couple of kids in the system, one of whom might make his big league debut against the Giants on Tuesday. So that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, Price is today, and they're going to try to stretch him out so he can be a starter again.
Yeah.
And they don't have anyone for Tuesday, and then Urias comes Wednesday, and the Giants have whacked him around a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
and then Buehler on Thursday. So there's going to be an interesting series, and the Pirates come in. How about the Pirate game? Did you see this one yesterday where the grand slam in the bottom of the ninth to beat the Mets?
Yes, I did. I saw the highlights. I saw them going crazy. Didn't that guy get a big hit against the Giants, too, the last time
Absolutely.
They played?
Absolutely. Stallings,
yeah.
Yes, he did. He
Stallings,
won the
yeah.
game. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they, you know, that's it's that division, even when you get down to the lowly Pirates, it seems like they all just rake and they're all dangerous. And you know, it's I don't know. I've always kind of liked the Pirates and the way you know, some of the great hitting clubs they've churned out there. And they still hit the ball great, Frazier and all those guys. So, yeah, that was really fun. I had a pretty crushing loss, too, for the Mets.
Well, you think the Mets have have this division locked up. And it's on Sunday. We always like to take a look at it. Atlanta went out and made a couple of deals. Not big deals, but, you know, Peterson hit a home run last night. And
yeah.
They got Steven Vogt. And they're not throwing in the towel, Atlanta, at all. And the Mets, I don't care what anyone says, I just don't see them as a lock to win that thing.
Well, you know, now DeGrom is taking a little time off, I think, for the third time, at least the third time this season, where he just, well, let's back off a little bit. After a while, that's not a trifle. And, of course, you know, that guy's he's the best pitcher in the game right now. And if he's going to be out, that's not a good thing. I thought those were two really good deals for the Braves, two really inspiring kind of guys. Vogt's a tremendous clubhouse guy and a really good backup catcher, pinch hitter, and Peterson just got that wicked left-handed swing, which he's already unleashed on people down there. And they lost Acuna, but they still have a ton of hitting. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get back on top of that thing. But the Mets are going to need DeGrom and you know, Lindor, he's the latest guy to you know, pull his oblique, you know, drinking a glass of OJ.
Swinging you can't even swing the bat anymore. Look at Crawford.
No, you can't. You might as well just stand there. The game will be played by statues before long.
Well,
just don't move. You might be okay.
It is incredible, isn't it, this year, how many pulled muscles we're seeing? Isn't it amazing?
It is, and it's just bizarre. And I always go back to, I think in a lot of cases you're talking about guys who have overdone their weight training. You know, you're overdeveloping muscles, you're idle and idle, all of a sudden you're bursts of energy, and that oblique is just so vulnerable these days, and it can grab you at the drop of a hat. And it never happened before. In the days when weights were considered a bad thing, and you just wanted to be flexible and have your conditioning and cardio and everything good, hand strength and everything else, but you didn't need to, you know, look that good in the hotel lobby with your newly found muscles. I really think that has something to do with it, because it's just it happens too often, and it happens for reasons you can't even understand.
Well, as you say, you can't drop your hat anymore, because when you pick it up, you can pull a muscle.
Yeah, there might be some sticky stuff in there, so please don't drop it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it is something just to see these injuries. Trades, and I just want to get a – this is a gut reaction question, because this is going to be a lot of fun over the next couple of weeks. I think the baseball world loves to have trades. You know, this is what we live for, to be the general manager and go back and forth. Larry Kruger right now is in heaven, you know, with making trades every single minute of the day. And I'll ask you this. When you think of trades, do you have favorites that come to mind? And it's just a gut reaction question. I have one in mind. I'll ask you first.
Well, I mean, my first memories are all from like 1902. You know,
boy, that Christy Mathewson trade was a good one.
Yeah, boy, who could forget that? And but I mean, you think about the Giants trading Cepeda. It had so many implications. You know, they had Cepeda and McCovey on the same team, which is such a dreamlike situation. But they pretty much are two first basemen. Cepeda just had to go. He was a very popular Giant, really more popular than Mays in those early days after they moved west, and it was just so tough to let him go. And he goes to St. Louis, and he becomes the heart of the order there on some of the greatest teams ever assembled. That was a very a very influential trade, and you know, the Giants, they survived it. I mean, if you're going to keep McCovey at first base, you're going to be okay, and their lineups remain, you know, just totally fearsome. But that always stands out as something where you kind of got to your heart a little bit, and it made such a difference.
No, that's a great answer. Great answer. And for me, it was Frank Robinson being traded from Cincinnati to the Orioles.
And, oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, it was December 1965, and Bill DeWitt, who was the general manager, I guess, general manager of the Reds in those days, said, well, we think he's an old 31.
Whoa. and he was. He was an old 31 in his head.
Yeah, and he went to the Orioles and changed the course of Orioles history, really. He was the missing piece for Milt Pappas, Jack Balchin, and Dick Simpson.
And, oh, my goodness.
That was the trade. So for me, that's the one that always jumps out. But it's an interesting column, I think, at one point. Maybe your five trades that sort of you live with for your whole life.
Ones you just never forget.
Yeah, as a baseball fan. Well, we'll see what they're going to do here. And, again, the Kevin Mitchell trade, we covered that a couple of weeks ago. Was a good one, too. Boy, Johnny Cueto today, Wade LeBlanc. Wade LeBlanc is the old George Brunette. He's been on like 10 teams already.
this year.
You know, the 36-year-old lefty. And here's Cueto, 35 years old. What do you expect today? Well, what could happen today?
Well, with Cueto, what do you expect? You can't even – you have no idea what to expect. But, I mean, LeBlanc is – he's basically been a reliever. All of a sudden, they've made him a starter. He's made three starts. His last three outings were starts. He lost two of them. The Cubs beat him and only lasted three innings in his last one. So, I mean, it's a vulnerable guy for sure that the Giants really should – they should get a win today if Cueto has anything at all. So, you know, I look for LeBlanc to pitch a one-hitter and Cueto to give up eight in the first.
Really? And the Cardinal bullpen to give you six innings and not walk anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
This will be a bullpen game, obviously, for the Cardinals, and we'll see what – that bullpen is very vulnerable, but they throw hard. They really do, but you have to be patient with them. Hey, one last thing about the Cardinals. Yadier Molina, boy, every time you turn around, he's setting another record. He went past Dina Slaughter on the Cardinal hit parade list. He went past Gary Carter in games caught. And then he's number 10 all-time on hits for a catcher. So the Hall of Fame credentials, I think, are sealed for him, aren't they, Bruce?
Well, I think they have been for several years. Yeah. I really do. And he's as good as ever, really. There's been no real noticeable. There's no aspect of his game where you go, oh man, you know, this isn't good. He's still got the arm. He's still a dangerous hitter, a good clutch hitter. But just the mind and the attitude and the knowledge that he brings, not just handling the staff, but just the presence that he has is such a terrific thing. And you know, there's three guys in this argument. You know, we've talked about Salvador Perez being a Hall of Fame candidate. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people may know about him outside of KC, but he's absolutely one. And of course, Buster Posey is back into the Hall of Fame picture. I don't think he was ever out of it, but the year that he's having and hopefully can sustain when he comes back has been big for his case. And you know, this is it's a really good era for catchers who do everything well. It's not like Ernie Lombardi, who just sort of hit his way in, or you know, the really great defensive catchers. These guys do it all, and it's a pleasure to watch.
Well, Brian Murphy brought up something interesting on Friday. You know, he was in St. Louis with the morning show, and Adam Copeland is there too. About Stan Musial, I don't know if you heard it, but he said he's one of the great underrated players. People don't know about Stan Musial, but they, you know, when you talk about the greats of the game, they don't talk about him. And I started thinking about it, and I said, well, it's been 60 years since he retired. That's number one.
and
number two is the great Cardinal teams became great after he retired. And that's
exactly. Yeah. I was just saying it changed in 64. You know when it really changed, and we'd love to bring this guy up, but in all seriousness, it changed when they fired Sally Hemus as the manager. Sally Hemus, who we love to talk about, was a blatant racist, and Bob Gibson and Kurt Flood talk about how blatant he was in that regard. And when they fired him in 61 and brought in Johnny Keene, he was the absolute reverse of that, a man who saw no color. And Musial, I think he retired in 63. That was his last year.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, they take off, and an era of Cardinal baseball, you know, begins that we still see remnants of. But, I mean, you think the people at Ebbets Field thought he was underrated?
Stan the Man.
Yeah,
that's where he got the nickname.
I mean, in his day, he was rated. He was not underrated. He was great, and you knew it at the time. He was like Ted Williams. I mean, the numbers are just astounding in the National League. And the only thing that really held him back was that he didn't, you know, get into the World Series. But other than that, I mean, come on. The stats are unbelievable. You know, a terrific guy, absolute ambassador for the game, and about as good a guy for the game as you've ever had in the history of the game. So today, people look back and they look at numbers and this and that, and he might get skipped over a little bit. But geez, if he were there in his prime, and I wasn't, but you were. You must have seen him in Ebbets Field, or were you?
Well,
in,
yeah, I
you were,
remember.
That was a little late. Maybe you were.
I was kind of young at that point. I remember Ken Boyer with the Cardinals coming into Ebbets Field, but not that. But I remember everything you just said about Musial and getting his 3,000th hit. I remember hearing that. I listened to that on the radio. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But Murph brought up a good point, and I think we've covered it, really. You know, in his day, he was Ted Williams. And it's just that the Cardinals became really good after he retired, so we don't think of him in that Cardinal way.
Yeah, I know. It's too bad, but I think, you know, for him, hanging around St. Louis and, you know, he's played the harmonica and he's a man about town. I mean, he lived in St. Louis knowing exactly what people thought about him. And if it didn't get around to other towns, that's a shame. But, I mean, and of course, anybody who really knows or follows the game, you know, you put him right there. And another thing is, like, on the all-time teams, you know, you're getting around to guys before him if you're talking about the outfield. And you also are if you're talking about first base. So it's not like, well, put Mays in center, you know, put Aaron in right and, you know, or whatever, Clemente in right. But with Musial, where are you going to put him? Next thing you know, he's not on your team. Mm-hmm. But he should be.
Mm-hmm. No, good point. 3,630 hits, 1,815 on the road, 1,815 at home.
Well, there's one of the great stats ever.
Yeah,
right
one of
there.
The perfect ball player. He's a perfect ball player. I like that. Hey, a little historical note today. Very big day, July 18th. Willie Mays, 1970, finally got his 3,000th hit at Candlestick against the Expos.
Yeah, this Saturday day game. Gaylord Perry on the mound. You know, checking that game, there were 16 hits and 7 walks in the game. It's a pretty busy game. The time of the game, 2:07.
Wow.
I mean, and you know, people say, "Well, who gave up Mays' 3,000th hit anyway?" And you might not get an answer for weeks. It was Mike Wegener. It was he singled in the second inning. He scored on a double by McCovey, and he got a hit later on, a hit that scored Bobby Bonds. I mean, great Giants lineup. Bonds, Bobby Bonds led off. You had Mays, McCovey, and Jim Ray Hart. But I was just thinking about with 3,000 hits. Yeah, you know, it's a great list, the great names on it, but there really aren't very many guys on it who were also, like, really prodigious, like, legendary power hitters like Mays was. If you're talking about guys who hit more than 500, which is a pretty good measure, it's just Aaron Pujols and, you know, Eddie Murray and A-Rod. That's it, and Mays. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes an awful lot to be that kind of a power hitter and also get 3,000 hits.
Unbelievable.
What a thing.
Yep. Well, they say, and I believe it, you know, I've done so many interviews over these 25 years, and I ask people the greatest they ever saw, and it is Willie Mays. It's almost unanimous.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we were talking yesterday about the face of baseball. Yeah. What I love about a good baseball season is that there is no face of the game. I mean, Willie Mays, by all rights, you know, is that kind of a player. He did everything well. He's the best player in the game. But, you know, you couldn't say he was the face of baseball, you know, with guys like Koufax and Mickey Mantle. And that's what I loved about his era was that there were so many really tremendous, historically great players, and just as a ball player, Mays rose above all of them, and he's still viewed that way. And it's a terrific thing that, you know, he's still with us, and it's just so well acknowledged that he was the best. You know, all these guys that he played with, incredible era, but he was still the best.
Boy, I'll segue to something else. You mentioned Koufax. It made me think of this. Did you see that the Arizona Diamondbacks selected the first Orthodox Jewish player ever in the draft, and he's a left-handed pitcher, Jacob Steinmetz. He's from the East Coast, I think from Connecticut. He's 6'5", like 220, throws 95 and a curveball, and he says he'll play on the Jewish holidays, but he'll walk to the ballpark on Saturday and keeps kosher. And I said, "Is this Koufax? Could it be? Could it happen? Could it be another?"
I'm going to say no.
They picked him 77th in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, Ohtani, of course, isn't Jewish. Ohtani's not Koufax. I mean, nobody's Koufax. But I pull for the guy. I would love to see him come in and be a dominant pitcher. That would be terrific.
Yeah, he doesn't look like a little reliever. I mean, you know, you're talking 6'5", and the guy's got, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think this is going to be I just wanted to bring it up. I thought it was interesting. Last thing, David Cone's perfect game on Yogi Berra Day against the Expos again, the Expos part of it. And who's there to throw out the first pitch? Don Larson to celebrate his perfect game. Isn't it baseball, the circular nature of baseball, it all comes around?
That is amazing. Yeah, I was covering a lot of ball during Cone's time and covering World Series. I love talking to that guy. Boy, what a super bright guy. Very, very smart and a little bit of mischief. He got into a lot of, a few too many late night episodes where, you know, investigations this and police reports that. But except for talk about pure stuff, he had one of the greatest sliders ever thrown. He called it the Laredo after Gaylord Perry. He learned it from Gaylord Perry. But I mean, David Cone to me was in 1991. He's in Philadelphia, and Cone finds out that the police are investigating a rape charge against him. He finds out the night before he's going to pitch. So the Phillies say, the Yankees say, you know, you can just, I'm sorry, he was with the Mets. The Mets, just go ahead and just skip this start. We'll figure this out. He goes, no, I'm going out there. He goes out with all this surrounding him and strikes out 19.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough-minded guy, and the allegations proved to be unfounded. But, I mean, this guy had great, great World Series wins for the Yanks against the Braves that I witnessed. He was with Toronto, and they win it. He was with Kansas City, where he's from, and that was a great. He's one of the most talented pitchers I think we've ever seen. And it all came together when he threw that perfect game. A flawed human being in a way, and got himself in trouble. But, you know, he's on the air now, extremely bright broadcaster, and I'm happy for him.
I am too. And he's a good broadcaster.
Yeah, you know? He is.
Yeah, he is. He's very good. Boy, great to talk to you today. Boy, did you see what happened in Washington last night before we leave?
Yeah, I had the game taped, and then I heard about it, and I hadn't watched it yet, so I kind of fast-forwarded to the sixth inning, and it happened between innings, so you weren't watching it, you know, as it happened, or maybe even hear the gunshots. But my goodness, I mean, you know, there was a bit of panic, and at that point, you know, if you're there, if you're in it, you're wondering, you know, what, is somebody in the park with a gun? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
that's the last thing you need.
Yeah. So that was very unsettling. And there were three people were hurt, you know, just a woman, sort of a bystander, got hurt. Two, I guess it was gunfire between two people in cars. Mm. Just, you know, good Lord.
Yeah, so that game got suspended. That'll be finished up today.
All right.
Boy, well, thanks for getting up early and Sunday morning, Bruce. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for getting me up early. I got a whole day ahead of me now.
Right, okay. Well, we'll see what happens with Cueto. And as I say, these Cardinal games have been terrific. The Giants could have won every one of them, and every one ends up in some dramatic fashion because of the bullpen or a great catch or something like that, or rallies. So I expect more of the same today. All right.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks, Marty.
All right. More coming up. Dave Jordan's going to join us next, and he wrote a book about Dave Parker. It's called Cobra, and it really is a good book. And I'll tell you, when you talk about baseball books, this is one of the better ones I've seen, and he also wrote the book about John DeAquisto, formerly of the Giants. So coming up with Dave Jordan, more coming up here on KMBR 680 104.5, the Sports Leader.